Hey there, Vet Blast podcast listeners. We come to you today with some exciting news. Nominations for DVM360's 4th Annual Veterinary Heroes Awards have been extended until May 31st. This means that you have almost 6 more weeks to nominate your veterinary superhero. Remember, we are honoring one person from 11 different categories. Keep in mind that these are peer-to-peer nominations, so you are encouraged to nominate any veterinary professional, no matter what you specialize in. So don't forget to nominate your veterinary superhero by May 31st. Check out DVM360 to learn more, and the link to nominate will be in today's show notes. Enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM360.
Well, I'm excited to have this conversation because we have not talked about any of this here on the Vet Blast podcast. And we're going to be chatting about responsible home burial and pentobarbital hazards. Are you protecting your veterinarian's liability? And joining me is our wonderful colleague, Dr. Celine Lihitu. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Very excited to meet you, to have a chat with you on home burial and pentobarbital, Adam, for a first conversation that's original.
No, thank you for sharing this with the audience. We definitely need to hear more about this. So to our wonderful friends about Dr. Celine, she is the CEO and founder as well of Euthabag, which we're going to chat about in a moment. And she's been in small animal practice since 1999, and she's interested in the psychological aspects of veterinary practice with the purpose of optimizing relationships both within the care team and with clients. I think that's just wonderful to hear that. And throughout the years, she's developed a personalized approach to euthanasia, defining medical act, one that has a huge impact both for the clients and the veterinarians, and for which practitioners are not prepared well for during some of her university curriculum that she's been teaching around the world. And so she has a huge passion and concern about animal and people welfare, and she's participated in spay and neuter clinics in Costa Rica, and she's a mother of three, and she loves to ride ponies when she can leave the office, and she's helped design Euthabag, which, like I said, we're going to chat about as well. So really great work, my friend. Thank you for being in our profession. That's wonderful.
Thank you. I'm one of those passionate like you.
I love it. So tell the listeners a little bit on how you would explain this interest that you have in end-of-life care and also in the body bag.
Yeah, well, you know, I would have thought that it would be my path when I was at vet school, as I was really more into wildlife conservation and so on. And then I started a general practice, and after a couple of years, I realized how impactful that last visit was. As at the time when I started in practice, I was 25 years old. I had never lost a pet myself. So I knew that it was tough on people. They were, you know, they were crying for 2 weeks or 2 days or maybe 2 months, but not more than that. I was never explained what grief was and the whole process they were going through. So, and then one day a client walked into the room with her little kitten for a vaccination. So I thought, oh, great, you know, fun and light appointment here, playing with a kitten. And as she saw my face, she just started crying heavily. I'm like, oh, hello, what's going on with you? And then she's like, well, I'm sorry, but you're the one that put down my cat. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I had no idea. I did not recognize her. I'm like, oh, what happened? You know, well, first, how long ago was it? So I thought she was going to tell me 2 weeks ago. And she says, oh, it's about 2 years. Like, oh, like she cries in front. She recognized me 2 years later. She's still crying in front of somebody she doesn't know. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's a big deal. Like whatever I'm doing, they might be remembering for the rest of their life. So since I didn't get any education on it, I had to figure it out myself. So I tried to dig into that topic and tried to do the best I could so I would provide them a nice experience. And then actually I asked her, like, so what did I do wrong, you know, for that appointment for you to cry? She's like, no, nothing was wrong. It was actually beautiful. I'm like, you know, maybe I missed the vein or maybe he did a convulsion or something. I happened. No, everything was good. Anyway, so that's where I just opened the box of, you know, how rich of an experience that was and how many details there was to tackle to make sure that we were helping these people at the level of which we're doing with everything else. You know, we are so strong on you know, making sure that we tackle every detail for surgery and just in medicine in general. And it seemed like end of life is more like not taken care of as seriously, I find, or something like that.
Well, I mean, it's been said that the end of life moment for a pet is the single most memorable moment that a pet owner will have, you know, and also for their life, their journey of their life. So it makes sense that when they see you like that, or they see you, they instantly go to that place, and you want it to be a beautiful end of life experience. So I'm glad that you shared that, because there has been instances where I, you know, had to put my friend's dogs to sleep. And in fact, there was two of them that actually had to leave, change classes. They love me so much, but when they see me, they instantly cry because they think of what a beautiful experience it was. And it just brings back these memories that they're just not ready to, like, you know, see me. It's one of those things that happens, you know, and I'll see people at the supermarket that I have had put their pets down, and they will stop and just cry, and I cry with them, you know? So it's such a it is a beautiful moment at the same time, if that does make sense, right?
I think it's a privilege. It's a privilege experience. And the more I go into my career, the more I appreciate these moments. You know, I don't thrill so much on, you know, a wonderful surgery. I just feel about experiences like that we create. Yeah.
And you talk about this body bag. I know you're very big into ecology. It's a core value that's guided your choices of designing the Youtha bag. So tell us a little bit about that part.
Yeah, well, it's I've always been a animal/nature lover. It's really part of my life. And then, at first I was on the market, you know, well, so, you know, I got into more of the euthanasia experience, how to improve it. And then at the end, I'm like, I'm doing everything, you know, handing them this poem and helping them with this quality of life questionnaire and all these little details I tackle. And I'm like, yet at the end, I still have to use like a garbage bag to put something that precious, you know, and that bond with animals is what brought me to vet med. So, you know, it's the most precious thing you can have. And yet you put it in something like that, where you usually put stuff that stinks or that you never want to see in your life. Like, the symbolic was killing me, truly. I'm like, you know, I've always been so proud of what veterinarians do that was making me feel ashamed that I was not honoring the trust they were putting in me. They always come to me because they want the best, and this is not what I was offering them. So I look online for some options. I thought, you know, probably in Italy I'll find something, or Japan somewhere I'll find a decent body bag and I'll buy it. And I couldn't find anything. I'm like, okay, looks like I'm planning a massive murder. I'm looking for body bags at night after the clinic, but I couldn't find anything. Plus, and then so I'm like, oh well, I'll just design one. And I'll market it, you know. I don't know how to make a surgery. I'll look it up and do it. You know, like that's what we do in VetMed. And then it needed to be a product that would not harm the nature. So it took me a while. And I finally, after years of research, between having kids and maternity leaves, I find a product that could be made out of recycled material. So I thought, you know, there's so much plastic in our world. Wouldn't it be nice to make a product out of garbage that we could use for cremation without harming the environment, actually cleaning up the environment and being a source of energy for cremation and so on. So that's how I ended up designing this product. I could have used some other plastic that are already used in human medicine that contain chlorinated compounds, but I didn't want that because when it burns, it produces dioxins. So that's, it was important. I thought I need something ecological so I can sleep at night.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, thank you for designing that. That's fantastic. Okay, so let's pivot a little bit and talk about pentobarbital toxicity. And how did you find out about that?
So I did my career in a rural environment in Quebec, and we had a lot of farm animals, equine as well, around. And about 10 years after I started in practice, we had a case of pentobarbital toxicosis. But for some reason, we didn't pay much attention to it. It just happened, and we thought, oh, you know, we got an accident there. A dog got a piece of equine carcass and ate him and passed out, and he woke up 12 hours later. But then more recently, I was looking into a closed Facebook group, veterinary group, and saw a thread on pento toxicosis. And there was like about 50 testimonials of vets in practice in the US that had horror stories about, you know, a guinea pig. They come to the clinic, euthanize a guinea pig, and then they're like, oh, we'll take him home for burial. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm so sorry. And then put it in the cardboard box and good luck. And then, you know, they bury the clients are not provided with any instructions, and they do their best. And then the family dog dugs up the guinea pig he's been wanting to eat for 10 years, just passes out. And then, you know, look at this situation. We are so careful in everything else. And yet for home burial, we let the clients leave with basically what is a biohazard, another pet full of pento that could poison another pet or a wildlife animal, a raptor, a fox, anything. So it's just a nonsense here. So I finally like, okay, I'm gonna contribute to my profession's education and well-being, because what is worse than a professional complaint? Like, I wouldn't blame a pet owner wanting to sue somebody if he was not provided with the information that could happen. I mean, this is pretty basic. We make them sign discharge for things that are way less dangerous than that.
I never really thought about, I mean, I didn't have this experience with me. I still don't so far, but it's out there, you know, I've heard about it. So, and what happens, I'm curious now that you're mentioning this, what happens with pentobarbital in the soil over time?
It's so surprising, and we don't know, and we don't think about it because we were not provided with such critical information. Yeah. So because nobody told us about it, we're like, oh, it must be fine, you know, to bury pets, because nobody told us at the university that we need to be careful about that. So yeah, a study was done, and it showed that the pentobarbital, depending on the type of soil it's buried in, and that study is quite recent, it's from 2018, they did a study over a period of 17 weeks, so it's not that long, but it shows that after that amount of time, 17% of the pento will remain intact in the sand, 19% remain intact in the topsoil, and 10% remains intact in the potting soil. So that's after 4 months. And then I just read an article published in JAVMA this week saying that, you know, all they can say is it's very stable and it will last for years. That's all we have. And what that article says is we need more studies on that. But what we know, and in my experience, the case that we had at the clinic where the dog ate some part of the equine carcass, it had been buried for 3 years.
Wow.
There's another, yeah, 3 years. So I would say if after 3 years it has not decreased, because there's another study that was done in 2015 in California in equine carcasses that were composting. And in that study, after a whole year, the pentobarbital concentration did not decrease at all after 1 year. So you can imagine, maybe it's 10 years or 20 years. Then I looked up another study that was done in Florida that has found pentobarbital in the groundwater. So the ground table is very superficial in Florida, and they have found traces of pentobarbital after 21 years after.
Oh.
So it's just unreal, right? That we're not talking about that. 21 years after some animals were buried in that area, they could find some trace in the water. So this is just unreal. So if, you know, saying that it's going to just disappear, like we are told for most medication after a while, the hydrolytes are not active anymore. It looks like pento is super stable.
Jeez.
But we need more studies. But meanwhile, what we have to do is make sure that we provide with our clients information.
Yeah, let's expand on that, because now that you're mentioning this, I'm sure our listeners are like, shoot, like, I think we should be talking about some of these precautions when burying their pet. So what kind of information should we make them aware about?
So, of course, because it's not legal in so many areas, there's not really, there's no guidelines about that. So what I did is I took the guidelines from how to bury a farm animal on a farm in Quebec and applied that to a pet. So basically what I suggest is to provide a handout saying you're not supposed to bury your pet in most places. It varies from urban to suburban, from to rural, to different states. But in Quebec, it's not allowed anywhere except on a farm. So you have to educate them on the first on the depth of how deep they have to bury their pet. Then do they need to get an authorization from ministry, from the municipality or the environmental agency? Then there is the distance to a water source. So people don't think about that. So in Quebec, the minimum distance is 300 meters. So 800 feet, I believe, from a water intake. Also, it has to be minimum 100 meters from a stream or a river, because if it gets flooded, there's a pet that is buried nearby. It will take some of that pinto, the type of soil. So I remember a case where, you know, this poor dog, 2-year-old with Lyme disease, we had to euthanize her on the spot. And the poor owner was devastated. And he's like, okay, I'll take her home and bury her. I'm like, I'm sorry to ask this, but how are you going to do that? Like, where are you going to bury her, really? He's like, well, you know, I've got a sand pit and then I'll put her there. I'm like, no, don't do that. Otherwise you'll find her tomorrow morning and on the side of the road, you know, somebody's going to dig her up. And he's like, thank you so much. I had no idea. I was just going to do that. So the type of soil is important. You don't want to be doing it in black soil. You don't want to do it in sand. Also, it's important to inform clients that they should declare that if they sell their property. We've had one case in Quebec where somebody sold their property with a bunch of animals buried in the garden, and they got sued and lost in court. So then imagine the guy that loses in court is like, I'm going to sue the vet because he never told me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Nonsense. So, you know, all these things, you should put lime on top of the body as well to balance the acidity. And then, you know, also suggest them probably of looking for a cemetery instead. So personally, in my practice, my experience, I tell the owners, I'm like, okay, I'm going to tell you how to do it. And most of them go like, oh my God, okay. How much is private cremation? And they thank me because they just have no idea. They've seen it on the movie and it was so pretty, you know, under the tree. Well, the fact is, if you do it under a tree, there's a bunch of roots. They won't be able to bury him deep enough and find him outside the hole the next morning.
Gosh. Yeah. It's so fascinating because we don't talk much about these things. So it's just, yeah, gosh. Now that I look back at it, when we buried our family dog when I was a kid, we buried him, you know, deep by a tree. But yeah, fascinating though. My goodness. Okay. So, you know, you mentioned like the legal ramifications about it. So what is there a legal responsibility for veterinarians then to properly dispose of animal remains?
I think there's a professional responsibility, and the AVMA guidelines on euthanasia underline that quite clearly, that veterinarians should know about it and should provide this information to their clients. But, you know, who has read the AVMA 2020 euthanasia guidelines? It's like a 40-page document.
Right. Well, I mean,
but it's stated there.
Yeah. It emotions run high during end-of-life care. And it's like one of those things when if you'll have pet parents that are very passionate about, like, we want to take her home and we want to bury her. But you have to try to get, I think now that you mentioned these things, it is important to say, you know, just so you're aware, these are some things that you should be mindful of when you're doing those things. But I think over the time, though, would you agree? I feel like more pet parents are doing either, you know, crematory procedures. Would you agree? Or do you think it's?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I've seen it decrease a lot, and less people are going for home burial. More people are going for a private cremation, which I think is better for everybody, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's just been very interesting. And the one thing I wanted to touch one thing about with the euthanasia bag too, I heard that you can also like put drawings, or you can the kids can even do really nice things to kind of memorialize the pet. Is that something that can happen on the euthanasia bag?
Yeah. And we just find how powerful it is for the pet parents to just feel. And then you would think, you know, most of the time it's a kid drawing on the euthanasia bag, but you know, it's anybody, and just writing something, writing the pet's name on it, and just makes the family feel that they will be with their pet for the rest of their journey. Right. I mean, they've been protecting their pet. They've been feeding, they've been just doing everything for him. And then out of a sudden, there's just this breach where they're not with him anymore. So just putting a couple of words on the euthanasia bag or drawing something particular to that pet is like a ritual that really suits the family and helps them in their process. And it's actually interesting to know that the power of ritual has been studied at Harvard Business School. I just thought, you know, that rituals are like, oh yeah, kind of something nice, but you know, what is it really useful for? It's helping people find, like, have a feeling of control, some control back over a situation they had no control over, which is the hard part about losing your pet, is you can do anything about it. So yes, it's very interesting, because otherwise there's no rituals. They just back home with an empty cage or nobody on the leash, and it's tough on them. So it's just a little something that helps them.
I think it's powerful. And I love that. I know certain hospitals will also write on the bag too, you know, it's been an honor serving and taking care of you. I think just thinking it's such a beautiful send off too. I just, my hat's to you on that. It really is a very, very nice thing to do. Oh,
thank you.
Love it. Oh, well,
yeah. And you know how vet tech are empathy officers. Yes. And they love, you know, with the bandages they do on the cast. Yes. They want to show that we're with them. You know, we share how hard it is with our clients. So they go off here, you know, on the euthanasia bag, just showing how much they care.
Oh, I love it. Well, Dr. Celine Lehetu, where can we learn more about you and our friends at euthanasia bag?
Euthabag.com. So that's euthabag.com. And you can find actually a home burial handout for your clients. It's in the Word format, so you can change it. You can customize it for your area, and you already have a base.
Oh, that's great. Excellent. Well, thank you.
And a lot of other handouts, like poems, quality of life questionnaires. We're trying to be a place where you can find the tools that I did not have when I was in practice, and that you don't have time to look for. So look at on tools for your practice section.
Oh, that's
hopefully
great.
There's something for you there.
That would be something great to do if you had for a lunch and learn for your team, just to kind of get alignment from the front end to the back end and CSRs, just to kind of see these are some things that we can do as part of our you know, end of life care, you know, protocol or whatnot. So I think that's great.
Yeah, because we definitely lack of education, even in the graduate of 2023. And by the way, on our website, you can find our CE platform. We have 7 credits of race approved education, all end of life, all positive, all little tips to make it easier on our vet teams.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Celine. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Please don't forget to rate this podcast. This is a very nice one too. It helps us out significantly. And we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.